This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Joy 94.9. This is the Escape Hour. Today, we have a special guest for The Lonely Planet, but we don't have Russ and we don't have Fiona. It's just Mark and Stefan. Just us. Lonely
Good afternoon.
Us. Good afternoon. And what's your week been like? Have you travelled or eaten anything?
No. Well, I've tried to eat a few things. I haven't travelled, no. Not yet. Nothing. This week.
Well, you've just come back.
Travel to work, to Burwood and back.
Yeah, that's not really.
Yeah, travel. But just come back from lovely Thailand and Sri Lanka, so yes.
Well, it's a busy travel season. That's why Russ isn't here. He's got to work. Mm. And we miss you, Russ. So I hope you're selling a million tickets to amazing places. I wonder how many tickets Russ is selling to gay pride events. They're all around the world at the moment. Some are in the Northern Hemisphere, and it's a big time for pride events. This week, we've got Berlin, Amsterdam, Chicago, Stockholm, Nice, and Hamburg celebrating pride. So get on a plane. It might be a bit late to arrive for a Saturday night thing in
probably
Nice.
Probably a little bit, yeah.
But give it a whirl. The UK is still struggling with the weather. It's gone up to 37 degrees.
That's quite horrendous for the UK,
it is.
To be honest.
For a country that's not set up for it, I think that, that's... The hottest it's been since about the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's very hot. And I think of the people who struggle during the heat, older people, people with disabilities, people who aren't as readily able just to cope, people that don't have access to cooling things like clean, healthy water, because sometimes you've got people who just don't have the access to a bath to cool down in.
Well, yeah, if they're even aged care facilities, that's kind of thing, you wouldn't. And also, none of the infrastructure are designed for that kind of heat.
Correct.
There's no trains, usually, the underground.
And they're hot enough as it is. So people who are living on the streets, for example, really struggle in this kind of heat, and it's relentless. And it's not like they welcome in high street shops.
Not usually.
No. So not having access to cooling things is very difficult. Apart from the Ryanair crew, who are on strike in Europe, a couple hundred thousand people haven't got where they wanted to go on their Ryanair flights.
Well, yeah, there's a... I'm not sure I...
care about Ryanair.
Well, no, I do care about Ryanair, and it's a, you know, it's a great way of getting to some places in Europe, and it's very, very cheap. But because it's very cheap, well, you know, it's the crew hasn't been really treated well, or the customer for that matter in some instances.
Yep.
So it's and I think it's good that they're on strike. I think there's a big Ryanair base in France as well, and they've been striking for a while, as you would expect.
Well, the French, as you would know, being French, not afraid of a strike.
No, not at all. No,
very Gallic. And the fastest growing travel destinations in 2018. You know where they are?
Well. Are they in Asia? Maybe?
All of them are in Asia. Amazing. Asia is smashing it when it comes to tourism growth and the excellence of travel opportunities throughout India, Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand, Singapore, Hong Kong, Japan is outstanding, and I can't see this abating. It's fantastic.
Have you been to all of these?
I haven't been to Vietnam.
Oh, maybe that's everywhere the next one. I think I've done most. I've done all of these, actually. It's a bit surprising. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, today on Joy 94.9, we have Chris Zia from, did I pronounce that right?
Zia.
We have Chris Zia.
It's always the bit that everyone gets wrong. Don't worry about it.
From Lonely Planet.
Hello.
I got that right, though.
You got that right. You got that right. I'm super excited to be back. We were just saying it's been a long time since...
It's been 3 years.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. But, I haven't been on a plane the entire time. But yeah, you know, it's good to be back in the studio.
Actually, last time you came here, it was the first... LGBT guide that was published
we did a guide to Pride. We did a guide to Pride, which was a free ebook that that Apple distributed globally, which was really fantastic because it was a really good uniting force for the LGBTI community within Lonely Planet. It was authored by, I think, about 45 different authors from around the world, and we all got a chance to kind of have our say on where to go. I believe it's actually still downloadable and still available.
Oh, wow.
So you just need to have a look for it. It's called Guide to Pride on the old App Store.
So you were reviewing all the products.
Yeah, and what we tend to do is with most of our product, what we want to do is review the event, but also the other cool stuff to do that's in the near vicinity. So you're not just necessarily isolated to that one experience, but you're able to kind of get a full kind of gamut of and you know, spend some decent time in destination. Mm.
Yeah, okay. So Pride season, very Northern Hemisphere this time of the year. It's summer. We have our own Pride in summer. What are the things that differentiates Pride around the world?
The bit that I learned actually this year, I was actually in Madrid earlier this year, and I didn't realise that that's actually the largest Pride in Europe.
Yep.
So it's the most attended. And that actually shocked me, because you kind of think Pride, you think, Amsterdam,
London.
Berlin, London, or maybe even, you know, other places like Stockholm, which you mentioned before. But actually the big one is Madrid, and the amount of people that go there is quite fascinating. For me, the thing that is actually the piece that is the thread that, you know, connects all Prides is it's a celebration.
Yeah.
It's a celebration of community, and it's a celebration of, you know, arts and that I really, really enjoy. It's not necessarily a big party, and partying's great, but it is that celebration of community and that connection, and showing the diversity of our community as well, which is really super important. So, and I think that's the thing that came through loud and clear across every single Pride that we reviewed. So it's good.
Yeah. Okay. So that connective tissue is, as Hannah Gadsby rightly said, living in the margin, self-deprecation is not humility.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's mediation.
Yeah.
So when we reclaim that pride, it's a source of great power and joy and resilience for a lot of people, who, especially older people who, I mean, we're standing on the shoulders of giants to get us where we are today, to have those pride marches. A lot of people had to put themselves at huge risk.
Totally agree. And I actually think what's really interesting is we've seen a shift within our business when we're looking at LGBTI travel, and we're not necessarily looking at lists of LGBTI-friendly destinations anymore, because a lot of destinations happen to just be your travellers. You just happen to be same-sex attracted, or you happen to be transgender. And I really like where that inclusiveness and that that kind of change in the rhetoric with particularly a lot of Western European and Western destinations is actually occurring. Mm. And I feel that that's a place of inclusiveness which really starts to break down a few borders. So I know that not everywhere in the world is like that, but that's something that I'm really picking up on. It's we're all travellers. We just happen to be attracted to different things.
Yeah, true. I noticed the difference when I came back from living overseas for 6 years in 2012, that when I left in 2006, Melbourne still had a gay hub.
Yeah.
Commercial
true.
Road.
Yeah.
And I came back in 2012 and it just sort of dissipated.
Yeah.
And it's what we've always asked for, with what we wanted, that we could live anywhere, be anywhere and feel free and safe and be accepted for who we were. And that's what we've demanded for so many years. Now that we've got it, it's kind of like, where's our neighbourhood gone? It's kind of like when you go to Sydney, you know, you go to 2010, it says Gaysneyland. It's amazing. Yeah. It's like, it feels so great to be a part of a community in a space that's so densely queer. Whereas in Melbourne, it just seems to have spread out, which is what we wanted.
Mm. Yep.
But
do we lose a little bit of a sense of community because of that? Or, I mean, I haven't.
Or we find other senses Melbourne. Of community.
But, yeah. Yeah.
I think that's right. I think what ends up happening is it gets replaced, doesn't it? And it evolves and it becomes, because really if it stays the same for a period of time, it's just going to stagnate and not necessarily do what it needs to do for the rest of the community. But yeah, it is an interesting one, isn't it?
But that means that most destinations you go to these days, particularly in sort of the more Western or OECD kind of countries, have either got a hub or it's blended in like it has in Melbourne, but it's safe.
Yeah, that's the key thing. I think it's kind of like, you know, I remember travelling with my partner Michael early in our relationship, and there was lots of question marks about how we would identify ourselves in destination. You know, did we feel comfortable about identifying that we were a couple, particularly when we travelled in Africa? You know, is that something that we felt really okay about? Whereas you hotel in Stockholm, no one bats an eyelid. Yeah. You know, they're kind of like, you know, have your arrival drink and off you trot.
Yeah.
So, which you know, and it is destination to destination. There are still a lot of places in the world where it's interesting to travel as, you know, as a same-sex couple in particular, because it does have issues attached to it.
Yeah, excellent. Okay.
Joy 94.9, Australia's best radio station.
There was an ad just before from Helm, which is a LGBT event, particularly for gay men from Arabic-speaking backgrounds. It's really quite important when we think of where to go and safety, because there is a controversy around that. I remember my partner and I living in Dubai. I lost my job because the employer found out that I had a male partner, and we decided to come back to Australia because we were just sick of living in a very, very small margin. I mean, we're still marginalised here, but sure. In places like the Middle East, you've got no voice.
Yep.
You're actively hated by the general community, and people are very entitled to say things. So an event like Helm matters for a lot of people because they come from cultural backgrounds that just do not embrace
hugely you. Important, right? And very much about inclusiveness and making sure that it's an okay message, isn't it? It's incredibly important to have these events, and not just for that community, but for multiple communities.
Which gives rise to the question: do you endorse travelling to countries where there is restrictive laws that are prejudiced against LGBTI people, or do you support the LGBT people in that country, for example, going to Bali or somewhere,
sure,
and support the local queer community? Yep. It's a controversy. Where do you stand?
So from a brand's point of view, from Lonely Planet's point of view, we are all about giving the best and most accurate information for people to be able to make the best choices that they can, so that they're equipped with all the information that is at their hands, so they can decide whether this is a place that they want to travel to or not. In every single product that we produce, there's a gay and lesbian safety section. And that is important because we really believe that those choices are with the individual, but we want to make sure that they're informed as much as they can. And obviously we also direct people a lot to things like the Smart Traveller website and other bits and pieces in terms of where we go. From a personal point of view, my safety barometer is always about how will I feel comfortable there as an individual. You know, if I'm travelling with Michael, will we be comfortable as a couple? Are we going to have to compromise too much stuff? So where's our kind of internal barometer on that kind of situation? The other really simple thing that we do is we also think about, can we get to an embassy close, you know, really quickly?
Pragmatic stuff.
You know, just little stuff like that. I mean, it takes all of 5 minutes to kind of go, okay, I throw that in my details in terms of either put it in my phone or have it in a piece of paper in my, you know, kind of travel wallet. But it's just those really, really simple things. And you know, I mentioned Africa before, and going back to that, it was really interesting just going across the border from Botswana to Zimbabwe, and how different that experience was.
You mean, why?
We went from being staying in an incredible camp in just outside of Chobe. It was really beautiful, very LGBTI friendly. You know, no question marks about us. We actually became quite popular within the venue, which we were excited about. We crossed the border, and all of a sudden, it was like we had become brothers. And we went on a walking tour, and immediately the walking tour said, the guy was like, oh, you must be related or you must be friends. So there was, like, it was really interesting. Even he was giving us the cues as to going, wow, okay, this is really super interesting.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So what plays into your internal barometer?
Yeah. So in terms of where we sit, it's kind of little things like, you know, are we comfortable if we go into a destination and all of a sudden we're put in separate beds? It probably means that I'll get a better night's sleep. But, you know, it's just little things like that. It's just kind of like assumptions around, and does that make us feel comfortable or does that not make us feel welcome at all? We actually just have got back from a weekend in Uluru and had the best time there. And again, it was kind of incredibly inclusive, and we were just, you know, we were, again, like, welcomed and chatted to and all that sort of stuff. It was just that normalised piece is really, really great. But as soon as you get into a destination where that feels awkward, is when you kind of go, oh, really? Am I really super comfortable with this? Travelling by myself, different kettle of fish. You know, really quite happy to travel through the Middle East, you know, through some areas of Asia and Africa all by myself, because I'm not really kind of, you know, I'm not holding my partner's hand in destination, if you know what I'm saying there. So, yeah, it's interesting.
As a couple, what would you compromise on? What would you be happy to compromise on?
Again, it was one of those things like, you know, would we had to question whether we would ask whether we'd be put in the same bed in one place in Africa, because again, we were immediately put in separate rooms, and we had to have a conversation about, does that actually make us feel comfortable going down to the front desk and going, look, why have you decided on that? And I think the other thing which is really interesting is the shared economy now, that those kind of booking sites like Airbnb and all that sort of stuff actually takes a lot of that stuff away from you. But But again, you know, in certain destinations, you have to think about, oh, is our, you know, is our host going to be comfortable with, you know, with who we are in these particular destinations as well? So again, and you have to ask yourself as a couple all these kind of questions. So, and obviously for certain destinations, it's as an absolute no-brainer, but for certain other places, it's just things that we ask ourselves as a couple.
Yeah, and it's a big world, so there are a lot of places you can choose to go, and there's only so many times you can spend a dollar, so that helps filter out destinations, I guess. Like, I'd love to go to Russia. It fascinates me.
Yeah.
But I'm also afraid of it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So I attend the Eurovision Song Contest every year, and it is a question that we, at the group that I go with, we always ask ourselves, is if Russia wins, will we go? Because we went to the Ukraine, and so went to and attended the event in Kiev, and that was really super interesting. We were all a bit kind of cautious about how that was going to play out. It was fantastic. But the real key question we have is a destination like Russia, which is a place that I would love to go because it's super fascinating, but it's kind of like, I don't know. That's a borderline one for me.
Yeah. So, Africa, you were saying that there was like a day-night difference over a border.
Correct.
What culturally made that difference between Botswana and Zimbabwe?
So Botswana is, even though the laws there are, I believe homosexuality isn't, it's not criminalised. It's kind of like they've got lapse laws. Very open, very interesting. And obviously it borders South Africa. It's got Namibia to the side. And then so where we were staying was on the border of Zambia, Zimbabwe and Botswana. Okay. And we wanted to do a trip into Victoria Falls, which is on, you know, it's absolutely beautiful, and that's kind of one of the things that we wanted to kind of tick off our travel list. But it was a very noted difference as soon as we crossed the border from being, you know, everything was super happy. You know, we were in a little tour bus with the driver, and it was kind of like the guide from the driver was like, now I'm telling you this, you need to be aware of X, Y, and Z, and you probably will be asked, are you brothers? Are you friends? Are you whatever? I would say to you, go with that story. It was interesting because that was a word of caution from that particular person. And interestingly, we were asked that question within 15 minutes of joining this guided walking tour as well. It's like, wow, okay, I wasn't expecting this.
Yeah, so is there... are you concerned about violence or discrimination?
For me, you get into that zone of going, oh, I want to protect my partner, and so I am concerned more about violence. I'm not certain, you know, from my own point of view. No, I don't care about that. I can defend myself, but you know, I worry about, it's like, I don't want Michael to be attacked. So it's that kind of thing, and I also don't want to feel uncomfortable. Or you know, I've been an out and proud gay man most of my life, so I certainly don't want to be forced from a destination's point of view back to, you know, be really pushed back into the closet. And that's, you know, that's going back to my personal barometer thing, that's a personal choice. So again,
were you aware of this before you went, or was it a non-delightful surprise?
It was aware but not conscious, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So you read it.
It was in the back of your mind, but it wasn't self-evident.
No, absolutely. You read it, you hear about it, but as soon as you're confronted with it, it's a very different kettle of fish. Yep. So, and it's kind of like, oh, crap, I didn't expect it I didn't expect it to make me feel like that.
Yeah, right.
We got across across the border to Botswana, and we were like, okay. Okay, and it's like, and then we were off to Stellenbosch the next week first. That was all like wine country, let's
do it.
It's fine, yeah. We're all good. Little hiccup.
We'll drink our way through.
Exactly. You know me.
So you didn't spend a night in Zimbabwe.
It wasn't in our plans, but we certainly had we saw two other same-sex couples, and they looked terrified, and they'd actually come out of the hotel to join this walking tour that we were on across the falls, and I was like, oh my god, you boys look like you've been through the ringer. And Michael and I kind of looked at each other and we're just going, glad we didn't stay. It's, you know, it really, you become the wealth of your experience, don't you? You kind of know what you can tolerate and not tolerate, and we both said that that's probably a situation that we wouldn't put ourselves in. And Mark, to your point, really that is meaning that we're filtering out destinations. So the next place that we go to is going to be somewhere that we're actually going to go, I don't want to have that experience.
Yeah, look, Indonesia's got some terrible laws being negotiated at the moment, which are really negative towards LGBTI people. And a lot of people say, oh, never go to Bali again. It's like, I know a lot of gay-owned businesses in Bali.
That one's a hard one.
And Bali is a Muslim part of, it's a Hindu part of Indonesia, which is predominantly Muslim, and the Balinese are not homophobic.
Yeah.
they're not necessarily pro.
Yeah, but Bali's very different to Jakarta, isn't it?
Yes,
it's a very, it's a very different
or Aceh.
Kind of, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's hard. It's like when you talk about Asia and people kind of like, you know, dump Asia into one kind of like, it's like, no. There is so many facets to Asia that it's incredibly interesting. So, and even in a singular country, there's so many little microcosms and micro communities as well that are either accepting or not accepting. And I'm probably in your camp there. I don't think it's the right thing to do to boycott a destination like Bali because of the fact that its kind of parent country in Indonesia has some less than progressive laws.
Yeah, because you're also turning off the cash flow spigot to
totally.
Businesses that are owned by and employ LGBT people who might not have other opportunities.
I absolutely agree, and it's also about making sure that there's a positive representation of our community within those destinations as well, because that stuff does break down barriers.
Yeah, true.
So I'd hate that we would be, the community would be looking at destinations that, you know, in that fashion.
Okay, so Africa, huge, diverse, incredible, multicultural continent. It's very, very diverse. What did you find really interesting, or what stood out to you that was surprised you?
Look, it is what surprised me is actually like I grew up in South Australia, grew up in the Adelaide Hills,
Adelaide Hillbilly.
Yeah, I am. we'd often holiday in things like the Flinders Ranges and stuff like that when I was a kid. I actually felt a real connection to the bush, as they call it there, and it was very, very similar to Australia. So it felt, except it had kind of elephants and giraffes and yeah, lions and things like that. I found that what I wasn't expecting to feel so connected to the earth or connected to the environment in the way that I was, which was really quite beautiful. We stayed in a fantastic camp that was 100 k's out of Chobe, which was on a private reserve, which meant that there was only six huts, which was glamping to the nth degree, but it was on an elephant watering hole. So every morning you'd go for breakfast and there'd be 40 to 50 elephants just at the watering hole, and they're silent. That's the other bit that I didn't expect so much. You're kind of like eating your bowl of cereal or having your bacon and eggs, and then you look up and there's 30 freaking elephants at the watering hole, like splashing around. It's like there was nothing there beforehand.
Not constantly trumpeting around.
No, and they're very, that was the other thing too, was they were very social, they were paying respect to one another within there's a hierarchy of the adults to the children, actually using the watering hole and bits and pieces as well. And it was hypnotizing.
So the Pachydermi patriarchy.
Yeah, I love it.
You're at Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
Today's guest is Chris from The Lonely Planet.
Hi, again.
We've been talking about travel through Africa and so forth, and, the controversy. Do you support countries which don't really support people who share our humanity?
Yes.
And I like to put it in those contexts, because most people enforce a suppression of my humanity because of their preference in mythology. So their god that doesn't exist supersedes my rights as a human, and I do exist. So, where do we go with this? It's very difficult. And I know that this isn't the Lonely Planet's perspective. This is yours as a person.
Yeah.
So when we're going through this, we're finding information, we're getting from all different sources, mm-hmm. and we were talking off air before about the difference in publishing and how it's all changed,
yes.
and the whole market in which information is exchanged is global now.
It's totally global.
Yeah, so your platform, there is room for press,
yeah,
room for digital.
Absolutely.
How's it changed?
I've been with Lonely Planet for 12 years, and I've watched the rise of digital. We were told that the book was going to die, that, you know, the ebooks were going to take over everything. I've watched the rise, I've also watched the rise of how people get inspired now by social media. We created one of the, what we think is what, you know, predates Facebook actually, a forum called Thorntree, where travellers could come online and actually ask questions of other travellers. And it's still a community that's roaring along. But we've also watched how things like Instagram, Pinterest, all those kind of social media platforms now can inspire a travel to a destination that was never really open or active before, or it can destroy or become that over tourism piece, which we're accused as a brand a lot of. But it's all about, you know, at least we can give advice on how to travel ethically, responsibly, and being you know, careful when you're in destination. A platform like Instagram can't necessarily do that. Which is super interesting.
Yeah, and because it's user-fed, it doesn't have that filter.
Correct.
One of our big maxims here on this show is take nothing but photos, leave nothing but footprints. Mm-hmm. And Lonely Planet's always had that ethos. A lot of other specialist websites talk very specifically about specific things, down to adventure tourism, or even food tourism, very, very specific things. And I think that that's where the benefit comes from. Is that something that you can't capture? Because I know that your world of publishing is more than just travel books.
Sure, right? Absolutely. So what we do, so we still have over about 400 guides in print at the moment. So, and where we're finding we're going to focus our print publishing list is everyone wants bite-sized content. So the big thing for us is how do we extend that kind of, we do a series of little pocket guides, and that's where we're going to be investing a lot of money over the next particularly 2 years in terms of print publishing, because people want that thing that they can have on their person or have in their, you know, have in their bag or have in their handbag when they're actually out and about in destination. We will still do, obviously, the big guidebooks that we do, which is all the kind of planning tools. We then look at every other platform that we've got, so lonelyplanet.com, whether, you know, our app, you know, what we do on social media. Every part of that other product portfolio has to complement one another. So rather than it cannibalizing, we talk about this a lot internally, we don't want one product to replace another. We want them all to kind of work cohesively. And the other thing we'll do is we will provide the traveller, our customer, information on whatever platform they want to actually consume it on. So if they do want it as a PDF chapter, we'll supply it to them in that way. If they'd want it in an app, we'll supply it in that particular way. So that means it's a lot of work in terms of how do you cut content and into those forums or into those areas of consumables for people to be able to read it in that particular way or consume it in that particular way.
So what are people asking for when it comes to travel? And how's it changed over the last years? Because the nature of travel's changed.
Interesting. So the big one for us is about, particularly in our printed product, we have actually removing quite a lot of, particularly in our smaller product, accommodation listings, because people aren't actually necessarily coming to a printed product. Let's use a printed guidebook to review a hotel anymore. So what they want to do is they want to hear more about itineraries. So not just about how to get from A to B, but how to get from A to B and what I can do within that journey. So it's itineraries. The internet's not really good at actually kind of joining those particular dots, which is interesting. So that's a big element. Inspiration is the other key one. I've never seen so many listicles in my life. Listicles are a big thing. People consume and digest those kind of, what are the top 10 things to do, what are the top places to get my coffee in France, and all those kind of bits and pieces. It's really interesting that's the kind of that almost BuzzFeed-y listicle kind of thing that has become really important in terms of our social forums. The other big one is about what to do in destination. So it's about the experience and how can I almost like cut the line, give me the insider secret that's actually going to get me to the front of the line quicker. And that's where we kind of feel that's the opportunity that we've got as a brand.
How is the traveller changed?
It's hugely, we're the most travelled that we ever have been in our history, right? So the traveller has changed dramatically in that you look at someone in the UK now that they can pick a destination by a cheap flight. So it's not necessarily that they're thinking that I want to go to Rotterdam in the Netherlands, but there's a cheap flight to Rotterdam, so that's going to be my destination, and therefore I'll go away and get my content in that format. So we had a traditional travel cycle, and that travel cycle has very much been disrupted. It was normally about, here's the inspiration, I've decided on the destination, then I go away and get my content. But that inspiration piece is changing dramatically. Going back to Instagram, someone could see a photograph on Instagram and go, okay, that's where I want to go now. Mm. So it is interesting in terms of that travel motivation is actually changing, and we have to adapt to that.
Mm. How interesting. Because the way I travel has changed, and mm-hmm. I think it's very much like that. I think of the experience I want, and then I filter out how to get it.
Yep.
Instead of looking at, you know, the old way of, like, I know I need to go to XYZ,
yeah,
and then I'd go and do that sort of out of a sense of obligation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The big one for me is also about the engagement that we're getting, particularly on, and I'll go back to Instagram, because travel is a very visual forum, and Instagram and Pinterest actually work really, really well for us. But there seems to be a little bit of negativity that's coming towards that particular forum, and that's the over-tourism and the overrunning of those destinations, because someone takes a really great shot of a place, and then all of a sudden it gets overrun. We know that in Tasmania in particular, there's some really issues with some environmentally sensitive areas being overrun, and people not being considerate of those particular destinations. So again, when we're active on those forums, how are we getting that information across to people in a way where they're actually being respectful?
And I think people can put themselves at risk as well to pull this.
A gentleman just perished not recently in Sydney, didn't he? He fell off a cliff. There was a gentleman in Albany off of Western Australia who did the same, and they're putting themselves into all sorts of dangers to just become, just, you know, a social influencer, which is absolutely ridiculous.
And, yeah.
Yeah, that poor woman that got bitten by a shark just because she was hand-feeding it. No one saw that happening.
She got national news coverage on it, you know.
But it's funny you were saying about in Europe and picking a destination. I'm going to Europe in December, and I was watching something on Sofia
on Bulgaria,
and I thought, oh yeah, Sofia looks like a place to go, and I've decided to. So just like that, and I'm looking for what to
I did it earlier this year too. So I actually found myself idle for a weekend in, some plans fell through when I was in London, and I did quite a bit of work over there, and I was like, okay, I've got a weekend to myself, I'll check out a cheap flight, and I was in Luxembourg City for a couple of days.
Isn't that a bizarre place?
It's fantastic.
Yeah,
it was really under my radar, but yeah. And then so those kind of things mean
some pretty heavy hitting tourist destinations around the area. So you got Netherlands, Belgium,
sure,
and it's not
Germany.
Far from Cologne, and you know, it's sort of some jaw-dropping place. And you get to Luxembourg, and it's like, this is really quirky.
Yeah,
this
it's really odd.
And they're not really anything. They're not German, they're not Belgian, they're not French,
they're they're Luxembourgers.
Yeah, and they're really proud of this, and it's like, what does that even mean?
Yeah,
guys?
I know,
are
right?
You even a thing?
What I did learn, and when I booked the flight and I got super excited, is apparently they are the third biggest per capita wine drinkers in the world. Oh. So I was kind of like, ooh, I found my people.
The exact tribe. You know, a Luxembourger.
Yeah. But I think that, again, if we get back to content, the key thing for us is about, we know things are always going to evolve. Like we recently released maps again, would you believe? So, you know, maps, printed maps have become a thing again. So that's been really interesting for us. So so we will continue to do what we can in terms of looking at what the demand of the traveller is.
Why?
Why planning. It's simply about planning and planning routes.
So it's not trying to get around.
No. It's about actually sitting at home and with a pen and actually going, I'm going to start in Madrid, and then I'm going to go down to, you know, going to go down to Seville, and then I'm going to go up here and this, that, and the other, and how do I track it? For us, that was kind of like a little bit of a brand epiphany. It's just kind of like, okay, we have play here. We should be providing this to our travellers.
We know someone in the business.
Yeah, because it was kind of like, this is what our travellers are demanding. So what that's the thing for us, it's constant conversation with our traveller, finding out what they want from us and making sure that we can go away and produce it and give it to them in the format that they want it.
So how have gay and lesbian travellers changed in your mind over the last years?
I think I go back to what I said earlier. I think that there's a change that's happened. I've sort of seen it over the last 2 to 3 years where it feels like it's we're all travellers. We just happen to be same-sex attracted, or we happen to be transgender, or whatever it happens to be, rather than this LGBTI-specific travel piece, which was about 5 years ago we saw kind of like, where are the gay-friendly destinations in the planet to travel to? I feel that that's kind of evolving, and that's the bit that I find really super interesting. I don't think we are going to remove our warnings and advice for gay and lesbian travellers like we do for solo women travellers. Or travel with families, and we give a lot of advice for those kind of communities that have needs that are specific to that community. I don't think that will particularly change, but hopefully it will evolve to a point, you know, in the next 10 to 15 years where we won't need it as, or hopefully those warnings as much. Yeah,
we're living in a Me Too world and time's up, so hopefully that there's a lot of stickiness to that, and we can stop having to tell women how to move through the world safely instead of just women moving through the world safely.
I know, right? I know.
So, of all the places that you've travelled,
all of the places in the world,
what's your top three?
Hands down, number one, Iceland. Hands down, it
so
is.
So, you're not talking about St Kilda, Iceland?
No.
Where the ice capades happen daily.
And I'm also not talking about the supermarket chain in London.
Right.
I'm talking about the beautiful country of Iceland.
Scandinavian.
It is gorgeous, and it is bonkers. And I got descended into a volcano, in a window washer's crate. And
say that again, because you don't often hear those particular words in that particular order frequently.
There's an amazing experience outside of Reykjavik, which is you can descend into it's a dormant volcano, but it's one of the few places in the world where the volcano hasn't blast. So there's a little opening at the top, and you actually get into this little window washer's crate, and they descend you through. It's almost like a little funnel, and then it bursts out into this big orb, and you're in the you're literally in the center of the earth, and then you're able to kind of scramble around, and I'm like, where are the dinosaurs? Where are the big mushrooms? You know, that kind of thing. And it is extraordinary. I've actually just written...
Where the red plants.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I've just written about it in a book that we're doing called The Best Travel Moment of Your Life, which comes out in October, and it is one of the most extraordinary experiences I've ever had. I ended up then back at base camp because they give you a mutton stew to kind of feed you back up because you do a lot of trekking to get there.
And I'm mutton.
Mutton stew. It's delicious. It's actually delicious. It's one of their delicacies.
Mutton
stew. It's really nice. I'm telling you, it's a bit delish. But I actually ended up, they had an Arctic fox that had adopted the base camp, and I'm feeding my stew to the Arctic fox, and I'm like, how the frig did I get to this point and this place? It was...
So you're inside an Icelandic volcano feeding mutton stew to a Scandinavian Arctic fox.
Basically.
That sounds like a name of a hipster band.
I can see the album cover, right?
And it would be an album too.
It would be. Oh, yeah, it'd be vinyl. Come on. And I think the other key thing for me is that they are, the Icelanders are all shades of bonkers. You know, they are a race and a nation unto themselves, and there is a joy there. There is a spirit there. I absolutely adore it. And so, I'll go back in a flash.
Apart from being dropped into a volcano, what else?
They believe in the most crazy things. So they believe in the hidden people. They built outside of Reykjavik.
A country that spawned Bjork.
Yes, yes.
That's unusual thinking.
Yeah, exactly. You know, surprise, surprise, right?
They brought me.
But there's a highway where there's this massive boulder right in the middle of the highway where it kind of divots, where you have to divot around. And it's like, they believe there's a family of hidden people that live in this boulder, and none of the construction people were willing to move that particular boulder because that was a family home, and so they've built the whole highway around it. They believe in the earth and in mystical stuff and their legend and their lore, and it's brilliant. Mm. And they're the most booked place in the world as well. They're the most books per capita. So as a bit of a book nerd, I also loved that aspect as well. It's just extraordinary.
Oh, this is
blowing your mind.
Blowing
I also, just to add one more in there, I was able to stand behind a waterfall at 11 o'clock at night and watch the sunset. So
What is this magical place? It's Narnia. It's amazing.
Do
you get there through a wardrobe, or how do you get there?
No, you get there through about 28 hours of flying time. Right, yeah, right. It's tough to get to.
Okay, where else?
that's the top one.
I've set the standard, right? I've set the standard. I really love Japan. Japan's beautiful. Mm. You can eat your body weight in tempura very easily. It is a very eclectic and interesting nation.
Any specific places in Japan?
Absolutely adored Naoshima, which is our island, which is the art installation. There's a series of islands off of the coast there, which has a series of art installations across across the community. That was really beautiful. Hiroshima is gobsmacking. It's one of those places I think every individual in the world needs to go to the Hiroshima Peace Park and actually understand what happened there. And understand. I really formed an opinion about nuclear power after my visit there. Mm. So that was super interesting, and hands down, the food there is some of the best food I've ever eaten anywhere on the planet. Japan. And also, hello, trains. If anyone's got a train fetish,
I don't know anyone who has, but I'm sure that they would be.
I'm sure there's a listener or two out there that does. And I'd round out my list by saying Sicily. I absolutely adore Sicily. I think Sicily is a really beautiful part of Italy. It's extraordinary. Again, food for me is a big thing. Wine travel is a big thing for me, and I was able to take my mum and dad there, and we toured around as a trio, which was great. And our best travel experience I think ever was the three of us sitting on the slopes of Mount Etna, drinking wine and eating like local sausage from the makers down in the villages down below, and we just rolled out of there. It was absolutely sensational.
There's a couple of volcanoes in this list: Iceland, Sicily.
I didn't think about that. I'm getting a bit of a volcano vibe. And the other one I'd say up there is New Zealand. New Zealand's so close to home, and New Zealand's so beautiful too. I'm there constantly for work, and I find New Zealand absolutely fantastic.
Mm. I like New Zealand.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah.
The land of the wrong white crowd.
That's why we played Openside before, right?
Yeah, you know? Yep. It's nice. So
friends across the Dutch.
I think we've got somebody that's
yes, it's Russell.
Russell.
Dear Russell, Iceland men are absolutely gorgeous. They love a northern light.
Oh my God, I got to snog an Icelandic fisherman, and I was very excited. He was all sorts of shady, beardy, kind of orange, and that was the other thing, because they've got that kind of orange tinge through their hair, and you know, you learn about the fact that the Vikings actually raided the Irish villages, and they took the prettiest girls from Ireland, and then they actually shipped them over to Iceland. And that's kind of where the orange tinge comes through a lot of their a lot of their genetics, which is fascinating. One of the few cultures in the world that actually had no indigenous in Iceland, and everything is written down, so they can trace their history back to the first word of the first settler that was there, which is also quite fascinating.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So there were no indigenous people there.
No. And they're all related, basically, to the same family. And there's my best story about Iceland is there's an app that they have, which the government puts out. And if you're out at a club and you're going, oh, hey, I think you're a bit of all right. And they're like, oh, hey, I think you're a bit of all right. You tap your phones together to find out how related you are.
Right.
So it's like, I'm about to sleep with my third cousin or my 23rd cousin.
We need that in Tasmania.
And a few other places in Australia too, I'm sure.
True. So where would you go back to at the drop of a hat? What's that?
Look, Iceland is one. The other one is Scotland. I absolutely adore Scotland.
Scottish people are amazing.
And it's just got a really nice energy to it.
Yeah,
it's really beautiful. So Michael and I are actually going there next year. We're going to spend three. I'm going to go up to the Shetland Islands for the first time. So that's quite cool. And I'm trying to convince him to go to the Faroe Islands as well. So I think
my sister-in-law's from Orkney.
Fantastic.
She's Orcadian.
I love it.
When her family get together and they speak Orcadian, we've got no hope of understanding. It sounds Norwegian.
Right.
Because it's hybrid.
So that's probably Iceland and Scotland are my two go-tos. I love it. And Italy's a big one for me. I absolutely adored that.
Yep.
You know, Montenegro, I can throw destination after
travel guide.
I know. Destination after destination at you.
So where do you think is the most challenging place for LGBT? LGBTI travellers to go?
I think that there's a couple across the world. Obviously, the Middle East really does obviously come up. It comes up for a lot of people because obviously there's the, you know, there's that kind of like, do I really want to overnight there or not? There's certain destinations in Africa, and there's certain destinations in Asia that all that all have varying degrees of issues. And I go back to that you've got to ask yourself those key questions about you know, in terms of what's your barometer of safety, and make sure you're informed. Information is power, man.
Mm. Yeah, true. So outside of your own publishing world, mm-hmm. what are great websites for people to go to apart from Instagram to get inspired about travel?
There's multiple that are out there. I think that in terms of there's massive channels on Instagram in particular that are great ones to have a look at. Are the boys called the Gay Nomadics? The Gay Nomadic blog, which is actually quite cool. They do lots of top fives in terms of destinations to go to. That's obviously really specific for gay men in particular. They're the kind of I tend to get all my inspiration from the old grammars, to be frank.
So who's good on the gram?
There's a paper boyo which I quite enjoy. He's got a really interesting take on travel. He basically takes little cutouts and puts them in place in destination. Mm-hmm. So he's really kind of super cool.
Boyo.
Paper boyo is his name. So he'll take these random little cutouts and actually be in these quirky destinations, and it's a different way of actually seeing it. It's super super cool. Right, yeah, Mark's just got it up on the computer there. It's
Boyo on Instagram. That's really funny.
So he's quite cool. I tend to also follow quite a lot of destination tourism Instagrammers at the moment. You know, because we're going to Scotland next year. I'm following furiously the Faroe Islands and triple liking every post that they're doing at the moment, because they're obviously, you know, they've got their ability to showcase a destination in a really different and interesting way. He's super cool, right? Paper boy, I love him.
Yeah,
check it out.
Next time you're on the gram, go to @PAPERBOYO, Paper Boyo. He's hilarious. And he travels all around the place, cutting out bits of paper and putting them in photos.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun.
It's actually very entertaining. It's very clever.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're on the Escape Hour with Mark and Stefan, and we've got Chris Thayer here. And so we've got a question, Chris, that we need to ask you.
Oh, a question?
Yes.
We ask all our guests this question.
Oh, should I be scared?
It's Russell's question. Yes. Russell, you just said that he'll see you at the gym later.
Yeah, we will.
So you might...
just confirming this is gay radio.
You might tell him off. Do you roll or do you fold?
Oh, you're going to... I fold. I've always been a folder.
Yeah. I'm a folder too, and...
I do what I want.
are you ambidextrous?
Well, when I'm travelling, when I come home, I tend to stuff shoes with clothes about to go in the laundry.
Sure.
T-shirts and so forth. So, yeah, I'm a bit of a folder and a roller.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I'm a bipacker.
I'm also a Tetris, so I do tend to adopt the Tetris method, because I find that that's a really interesting way of actually just kind of configuring everything, particularly if you've got a big trip ahead of you.
Yeah.
So do you have any special devices?
Got a few little boxes and bags and bits and pieces that you can kind of store things in, which are really easy. They're super, and if they get soiled, you can chuck them out and, you know, kind of replace them with everything. But I think the Tetris method is quite good. Mm. There's a lot of really good little YouTube videos out there on the Tetris backing method as well, which is, they can become quite addictive. All of a sudden, half an hour of your life has disappeared.
So... where's next? What's the next travel thing?
Yeah, next I'm in Germany later this year, so that'll be the next big one for
me.
Where
in Germany? We did a Germany show, a Berlin show last week.
Unfortunately, just in Frankfurt. So not
Stadt Frankfurt. It's exhibition town.
It is exhibition town because I'm there for the Frankfurt Book Fair.
Yeah,
that is, it's massive.
Yeah, yeah.
Then off to London. After that, back to London for a week or so, which will be lots of fun. Catch up with loads of friends and bits and pieces over there, which would be good. I can't wait for Christmas, because Christmas for me is always on the surf coast in Adelaide in the beach house with the whole extended family. Christmas Day on the beach with fish on the barbecue, love it. So I'm actually hanging out for the Australian summer.
And Adelaide has become really cool.
It's super cool. I predicted it 5 years ago. So I was like,
getting a Ouija board.
I was one of the key projectors of that Adelaide's going to become a bit of a hotspot. Yeah.
So instead of a hodgepodge,
little bit biased towards it, obviously. But would that be a destination you recommend?
I actually think South Australia for me has some of the best wine country in the country. Mm. And I've literally come off a gig. We did a distillery tour. We're doing a distillery book actually, and I went and reviewed 4 or 5 distilleries about 2-3 weeks ago. They're doing some sensational stuff with spirits, and they're really active in that kind of space as well. It's kind of one of those, it's small enough to be able to, they look after themselves, but it's big enough that there's a variety of experiences to have there. Flinders Ranges, Kangaroo Island, oh my God, it's a great destination.
Yeah, it's fantastic. My brother's just bought a farm in the Barossa Valley in Mount Pleasant.
Oh, Mount Pleasant, yeah.
Which is where both our grandmothers were born.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah, so a bit fun to see.
It's good. And also the dining there, if you're a foodie, food in South Australia, absolutely sensational. Yeah. Central Market's one of the best places to visit in Australia.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you very much, Chris, for joining us.
Thank you.
All the best with the future of travel publishing. It's going to be interesting to see how it rolls out over the next few years.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.